I'll be speaking in the next section. My name is Ian Wolberg. I'm a graduate student researcher at UC Berkeley. And what I'm going to be talking about this afternoon is digital cell phone hacking, basically. How to clone GSM cell phones. And I'll also be doing a little bit of an overview of the other kinds of digital cell phone standards. Okay. I assume most of you are familiar with how analog cell phones work and what their security properties are, which is basically none. Analog cell phones are basically radios. They just transmit all the information in the clear. All the protection against cloning and privacy invasion is basically legislative. And of course, we all know how well that stops fraud from happening. With the advent of digital cell phones, we're now able to add actual cryptography to the system and make it harder to defraud or harder to eavesdrop on. Unfortunately, what we've seen and what I'll demonstrate is that the cryptography they added is lame at best. So let's look at the different kinds of digital cell phones. There are a number of different kinds of digital cell phone standards deployed in the world. The most popular one is called GSM. It's actually the least popular in the US, but it's pretty much the standard everywhere else. There are about 80 million GSM users worldwide, and it's starting to grow in popularity in the US. In the US, the two main systems are TDMA and CDMA. And there are other systems that are just not very widely used. One thing that all these systems had in common is that they were designed in secret. Often they were designed with the aid of these vocal countries' intelligence or police organizations. And we definitely see evidence of this as we look at the GSM results. It's estimated that there will be about 20 million digital cell phone users in the U.S. in a few years. Compare that to 80 million existing GSM users. The U.S. has quite a bit of ways to go in the catch-up game as far as digital goes. Analog is still really widely deployed in the U.S. And the point there is that as long as digital cell phones are harder to break than analog cell phones, they won't be a target. Since it's so much easier for someone to clone an analog cell phone, that's what people will do. It's like the club in your car. It doesn't actually stop someone from stealing your car. It just makes it easier for them to steal the next guy's car. So that's what they do. However, certainly as time goes on and as digital cell phones increase in popularity, and maybe as analog cell phones are decreasing in popularity, we might see a shift to attack on digital cell phones, especially if they remain this weak. Okay, next slide. Okay, first we'll look at the North American security framework before getting on to the GSM stuff. So this is just an overview of how North American cell phones protect both the privacy of the user to prevent from eavesdropping and protect against fraud to protect against cloning. So all of the North American systems share basically the same security framework. And they all have the property that the security is only between the cell phone and the base station, the local radio you're talking to. Once the call information is at the base station, there it's in the clear. So if you think about that for a moment, it means that if the FBI wants legal access to a cell phone conversation, they just have to go to the base station or the telco switch with a wiretap order. And Scalia basically says telco switches have to implement this, although they haven't yet. And from there, they just get the clear text of the message. At that point, the message is unencrypted. So the only reason that law enforcement agencies would have to pressure the standards development method for read crypto on the airwave link is if they want to do illicit wiretaps and be able to scan you surreptitiously. So that's a little bit suspicious. There are also things like intelligence agencies want to do this and things like that. So the basic algorithms that are used in the North American system are CAVE, which is used for authentication. That's the fraud prevention algorithm. For voice encryption, they use an XOR mask. Now, this is basically, you know what ROT 13 is, right? So imagine it wasn't ROT 13, it was ROT N, where N is picked as the key. Well, that's what this is. XOR mask encryption is just ROT N.
How many
bits? It doesn't matter, it turns out, because the first packet of information in each direction is defined by the standard to be silent. So you know the plain text, you know the cipher text, subtract, and you get the key.
Oh, you're
kidding. Right? This is what I was telling Wayne earlier. And it's not as if it adds a little bit of protection over nothing, right? Already, it's using a digital transmission. You can't just turn on a radio and listen to the data if it weren't encrypted. It would still be like the voice data is digitized and compressed. So you'd still have to extract the data stream and uncompress the data before you can listen to it. But now you have to extract the data stream, uncompress the data, XOR with a fixed number, and then listen to it, right? That's really it. Okay. Control channel encryption is what's used to protect the numbers dialed. In North American digital cell phones, the numbers dialed is sent over a separate channel from the voice data. So the numbers dialed not only includes the phone number you dial, but also if you dial like a credit card number or a calling card number afterwards, it's encrypted in that system. And the algorithm for that is called CNA. ORIX is another algorithm used for wireless data encryption, and I won't go into that. Yeah. So I'll be getting that. Okay. Over the page. So this is the sort of state of how broken these algorithms are. So CAVE, the fraud protection stuff, remains unbroken. But as we'll see in a minute, it doesn't really matter. The privacy protection algorithms are all really badly broken. So as you saw, the XOR mask, that's just ridiculous. The CMEA was broken, about a year and a half, 2 years ago? And it's really straightforward. You can break CMEA in real time. And the CMEA recovers the digits dialed, so from there you can do all kinds of fun stuff and gather calling card numbers. Of course, you have to have, for all these attacks, a digital scanner or some reasonable facsimile. If anyone wants to donate a digital scanner to my project, that would be really cool. We haven't been able to do a lot of the over-the-air actual measurements because of a lack of a digital scanner. But we have, you'll see later the kinds of stuff we do have to actually demo. So the privacy protection algorithms are broken, and as I mentioned earlier, this is largely due to the fact that the algorithms were designed in secret, and especially in secret with input from intelligence and law enforcement agencies. And by input, I mean you do this or else we won't let you export any of your products. So the design meetings basically went like this. They were supposed to be open meetings, but they said if you can't publish any of this stuff and you can't let in any foreigners to watch what's going on, or else we won't let you export anything. Which is not only heavy-handed, but it's a lie, right? Publishing of data like this and letting foreigners watch what's going on is not, in fact, a violation of the photography export regulation, which, if you don't know about them, the fingers bliss in this case, and there's a special case. The North American standards, however, since CMEA was broken, work has started to totally redesign the security architecture, and the standards body, the CIA, that governs this has said we are only going to use published standards, published algorithms, peer-reviewed stuff. So things like, hopefully not DES, but triple DES, SHA, things like this. So that's a step in the right direction, and hopefully the GSM, the European standards, will do the same thing in the future. The problem is the voice privacy is a political issue, not a technological issue. Of course, we know how to protect voice privacy with strong crypto, but the same government players are going to be involved in the new design process, and they're going to have a say in how strong the crypto can be. But remember, the only reason you want weak crypto in the cell phone link, in the over-the-air link, is to do illegal wiretapping. So that should be removed. Okay, over the slide. So, not only are the algorithms broken for privacy, but the fraud protection algorithm is not broken. It doesn't really matter because most providers use an all zeros key anyway. So, you have this algorithm, you even have one we haven't broken yet, but you use an all zeros key for it. This is the known key attack. And it makes the system pretty useless for protecting stuff. But providers do have the option to switch to strong keying, an option which isn't available in Amazon, right? But what they have to do is, the reason they haven't deployed it is because the base stations don't have the equipment in them to do keying. And also, the distribution of keys in the North American systems is a bit of a pain. Because phones in North America are basically one unit, and it's programmed with your identity or your account number in them. In order to get a key into the phone, it doesn't use public key stuff, it's all shared secrets. So somehow you have to share a secret between the phone and the phone company. And that's a bit tricky. If you think about the total number of different people that build the pieces that go into the phone, it's like who's responsible for doing what, and it's really complicated, so they just decided we'll just put the same key in every phone, and that just makes it easy. Hey, so we're from a logistics point of view. The other problem is that most base stations don't have the encryption algorithm in them anyway. They're older base stations, they don't have the encryption circuitry, so the phone just turns off the encryption entirely. So forget this XOR mask, or I assume they could do an XOR mask, but CMEA, for example, they just won't do it. Again, the reason cell phones are not being actively fixed is because the industry is relying on the fact that digital scanners are still too rare and too expensive. But of course, that's going to come down really quickly. An industry exec testifying before the government. Ironically, he was testifying for stronger laws. He was lobbying for stronger laws to make it illegal to eavesdrop in or clone digital phones. He said, history will likely repeat itself as digital scanners and decoders, though expensive now, drop in price in the future. And of course that's true. Originally, analog scanners were expensive and nobody had them. But then you could buy them for radio shows. And once that happens with digital scanners, it'll be just that much easier to eavesdrop and clone digital phones. And the point that I mentioned earlier, analog systems are the easier point of attack. If you're just out to clone some phones, you may as well do the analog ones, right? Because they're way easier. Okay, over the page. So now I'll start talking about GSM, the European Digital Cell Phone Center. And now I have some toys. So this is a GSM phone. It's one of my favorites. It's a tiny little phone. One main difference between GSM phones and North American digital phones is in North American digital phones, your identity is programmed into the phone. And that's what made all the key distribution really tough. In GSM phones, that's not the case. In every GSM phone, there's a little removable smart card called a SIM, Subscriber Identity Module. And this is a smart card in the same way that the regular smart cards you might have seen for another SIM, or say a crypto smart card, or a Java smart card or whatever. These all obey the same standards. You talk to them the same way, the same software, which Lucky will talk about in a later session. Can you be used to read and program them? So that's really convenient. Now the smart cards for cell phones come in two varieties. You have this variety, which is called little, and this variety, which is called big. They're exactly the same except for the amount of plastic. Even as you can see in this big smart card, you might be able to see, it's basically there's a little one within a punch out. So you get this, and if your phone takes the little variety, you just punch it out and stick it in. If it takes the big variety, just stick the whole card in. So this, for example, is a Motorola GSM phone, and it takes the big variety of smart cards. So you just slide it at the bottom like that. I don't know how well the people in the back can see my toys, but oh well. Look harder. Okay, so the main difference between US and GSM phone is that the phone itself in a GSM phone contains no information about your identity or your account. These phones are basically disposable. In some parts of the world, you can like fish around in a dumpster, pick up a phone, stick in your SIM, make a call, take out your SIM, throw the phone away again. Right? These phones have nothing to do with your identity. All your identity information is encoded in the smart card itself. So, for example, you can have one smart card you use to make personal calls, one smart card you use to make business calls, but only have one phone. And then you build appropriately. Okay, so the GSM security involves three main algorithms called A3, A5, and A8. Algorithm 3, 5, and 8. I don't know what happened to 1, 2, 4, 6, and 7. Maybe it's Fibonacci or something. Okay, A3 and A8 are used for the authentication and encryption key generation. If there are any questions, if they're really technical, you might not want to ask them. Ask me later. If they're not really technical, please interrupt. I'm going to whip through the technical part pretty quickly. So for A3 and A8, each provider can choose their own algorithm for that. It's just a placeholder in the spec. But the spec provided a sample algorithm for A3 and A8 called COMP128. And unfortunately, what we discovered a couple months ago is that COMP128 is horribly broken. And you can use this back to clone GSM phones.
It's been on.
Now I'll get into much more detail about that.
The
smart card itself stores the secrets that identify what account you're calling from. A5 is the algorithm used for encryption over the radio link. It handles both the voice privacy and the numbers dialed and data, unlike in the US standard where voice, numbers dialed, and data were three separate algorithms. So in the GSM, A5 handles them all. Now, because of politics, there are a number of different versions of A5. There's A5/1, which is the strong version, which is a 64-bit algorithm, so it's believed to be much weaker than that in practice. And that's used for European-based nations and other closely allied countries. A5/2 is a weaker algorithm, that's used for some less friendly countries, and 850 is like no encryption that gets sent to a rack of living. All GSM cell phones contain all three of these algorithms, but base stations only contain one. So when the cell phone, when you take your cell phone to Libya, you'll be getting no encryption because the Libyan base station can't do it, and when you take it to Europe, you'll be getting strong encryption. The upshot of that, of course, is that if you can just take a disassembler to the ROM dump of this thing, you'll get the algorithm. As yet, we have not done this. A5.1 is, we basically know what it is. A5.2, we really have no idea. A5.0, of course, is not. So, somebody with a lot of time on their hands and a good CAD disassembler might want to contact me and see if we can get A5.2 extracted. Yeah. So all we don't have to extract the dump, that's been done. We just need someone with good knowledge of CAD machine code and a good disassembler and a lot of time. Okay, over the slide. So here are the details of what goes on. As I said, the identity of the customer is not in the phone, also called the mobile equipment or ME. But it's in the SIM. The SIM contains a 128-bit serial number called the IMSI, International Mobile Subscriber Identifier, and a 128-bit secret identity key called KI. This pair is what's used to authenticate the SIM to the network. Anything that knows both a valid IMSI and the corresponding valid KI can authenticate itself to the GSM network as a valid phone. So the goal in the end is going to be to extract the IMSI and the KI from the SIM. Now the IMSI, if you just read, the SIM will happily tell anyone it's IMSI and it just sends it in the clear over the air. It's just it's serial. KI is supposed to be impossible to extract from the SIM, but as we'll see in a minute, that's not the case. So here's how the authentication of the SIM works. The SIM, of course, has no radio on it. So what the mobile equipment, the phone, is actually doing is basically just acting as a man in the middle between the phone and the base station. The SIM itself is doing all the cryptography for authentication. For encryption, the phone does the cryptography. That's why the encryption is in here. A3 and A8, of course, are the authentication stuff, so the phone isn't doing that, the SIM is. So for that reason, when we do a ROM dump on the phone, we can't get the A3 and A8 algorithms out of that. They're not in the phone. We have to take apart the SIM to figure out what they are, but we figured out what they are by other methods. Okay, so the SIM sends the IMSI to the base station. Basically, the phone, when you turn it on or wander into a new base station cell, it sends over the radio, "Hi, I'm phone number this, authenticate." The base station, which is just the local radio in whatever local area or country you happen to be in if you're roaming, looks at the IMSI, and the first couple bytes of the serial number are a provider identifier, and based on that, the local provider says, "Do I have a roaming arrangement with this company? If not, I just say no. And if I do, then it sends the IMSI off to that provider's authentication station, which is basically one central server located in the home area of your original provider. So if I have a Pascal phone from San Francisco and I wander over to Europe, then assuming I'm in an area where Pascal has a roaming agreement, the IMSI will be sent from my phone to the base station, then from the base station to somewhere in California. The machine, the authentication station in California, then initiates a challenge response authentication protocol. It works like this. The authentication station takes a random 128-bit challenge called RAND. There's a name standing for a random number. The authentication station has the only master table of all valid MCs and their associated KIs. So every KI is stored in two places, once in this master table and once in the corresponding SIM. So the authentication station takes the A3AA algorithm, feeds in KI and the value of RAND it takes. The output of A3 is a 32-bit value called SRES, which is the signed response. This is going to be the response that the base station should expect from the phone, and if it matches, then the phone is authentic. And the output of A8 is a 64-bit value called KC, which is going to be used as the key for the data encryption for the A5 algorithm. The authentication station sends the triplet RAND, SRES, and KC to the base station. Now, the connection between the authentication station and the base station isn't specified in the standard. It's just sent over whatever network there happens to be available. Usually, it's an X25 network. Sometimes, rumor has it, it's just an unencrypted microwave link. So, of course, if you could intercept that triplet at that point, then you'll see the value of RAND, which is about to be sent to your cell phone, which is a clone. You're trying to make a clone. It's then, you'll see the value of RAND, and you'll see the correct response, and you'll see the KC that should be used. So you'll see that over the microwave link. A short time later, you'll get that value of RAND from the base station. You send back the value of SRES that you intercepted over the link. And then you just start copying using encryption with the KC value you intercepted over the link. So this is one attack on the GSM system. This isn't the attack we did. The attack we did involved no infrastructure. So it's a lot easier to do. But this just points that there's more than one way to load a phone at the moment. So authentication continues. The base station, which has received this triple from the authentication station, sends the RAND value back to the SIM via the phone, of course. The SIM, because it knows the same A3 and A8 algorithm as the authentication station, it knows the same value of KI, and it was just told RAND. It does the same calculation the authentication station did to get the same value of SRES and KC. It sends SRES to the base station, and then the base station checks that the SRES value is received from the SIM and the SRES value received from the authentication station are the same. If it's not, it kicks you off. And if it is, it starts encryption using the value of KC received from the authentication station. KC is never transmitted from the phone to the base station because it's not needed. You don't need to. They both should know the same value at this point, and they just use that as a shared secret key to encrypt with the A5 phone. Right. And as I said before, the base station chooses which of the 3A5 algorithms to use, because the only one is programmed into it. Okay, let's finish. So here's some ways to attack the GSM protocol. So in order to listen in on the conversation, the attacker needs to learn the KC value associated with the most recent RAND challenge. The base station is allowed to challenge a phone at any time. Whenever a phone receives a RAND challenge, it's required to do the A3 and A8 algorithm and return the SRES, the output of the A3. So you might see more than one RAND during the conversation, especially, for example, if you change cells. If you move from one cell to another, then it will have to do a new RAND because the new base station will be. In order to forge billing info, the attacker needs to learn the SRES associated with the most recent RAND. So the ways you can get the SRES and or the KCR, you could snoop it off the BSAS link, as I mentioned earlier. You could compromise the BS or the AS, they're just computers, we don't have computers. Just read it right off of that. The other way is if you know what the A3 and A8 algorithms are, and you know KI, you can just calculate them yourself. So the A3 and A8 algorithm most popularly used, as I mentioned earlier, is COMP 128. And COMP 128 was reverse engineered by the Smart Card Developers Association and presented to us, to myself and my office mate David Wagner at Berkeley, to see basically if this algorithm any good. Because that's what we do. Our research group at Berkeley does a lot of security and crypto and authentication and privacy and hash like stuff. It's all really fun. So they gave us this algorithm to see if it was any good. 2 hours later, we said we had it. So how can you learn AI? Well, you can read it off the sim with smart card hacking techniques. Lots of people know how to read information you're not supposed to read out of a smart card, and you could just take an electron microscope to the thing and burn the layers of protection off with a little acid and do all the normal things to read the KI off. That would have been plan B if the software-only attack hadn't worked. The attack we used is ask the card nicely. So, over the page and we'll see how to do that. So, because A3 and A8 are only calculated in two places, once in the SIM and once in the authentication station, and never in whatever provider, like if I'm in Europe, the European provider never will calculate A3 and A8 when I'm authenticating myself to my San Francisco area authentication station. So because of that, Pac Bell can choose whatever A3 and A8 algorithm they want, as long as they program one copy of it into their authentication station and another copy of it into their SIM. On the other hand, the A5 algorithm has to be the same for everyone, because every phone has to be able to communicate with every base station in the world. And they just do the three different ones for political reasons. So, this is how A3 and A8 are calculated. They're calculated at the same time. In the phone, you basically send the smart card, which is just a little computer, the command, run GSM algorithm, and here's the value of RAM. And it gives you back two values, the output of A3 and the output of A8. So the way it works is COMP128 is an algorithm which takes 228-bit input and outputs 128-bit value, hence the name. The inputs are KI and RAN, and the output is the first 32 bits of that 128 bits is just SRAN. And then I would have expected that the next 64 bits, or maybe the last 64 bits of the 128-bit output would be KC. Instead, what we saw was that the last 54 bits and 10 zeros were KC, which means, and since KC is the voice privacy key, it means that the voice privacy key was intentionally weakened from 64 bits to 54 bits. And this really is the difference between not brute forceable and brute forceable. And that's really interesting. And every SIM we've seen is doing this. So it's not just one provider made a mistake in their implementation. This is pretty obviously effect of interference in the design process by people who had an interest in making the voice privacy weak. I wonder who that was. Okay. Now the other problem we found is that COMP 128 itself has a weak. It's easy to find two similar values, R1 and R2, for RAM. That when you calculate COMP 128 of KI, R1, you get the same answer as COMP 128 of KI, R2. So COMP 128 is supposed to be a hash function, basically, although a lot of the documentation calls it erroneously an encryption. And a hash function is not supposed to have this property. It's supposed to be collision resistant. You're not supposed to be able to find two little close to that hash the same output. But in fact, it's easy to do so with COMP 128. And by looking at exactly which two inputs map to the same output, it gives you some information about KI. so what happens is every time we find a collision, we get 1/8 of the key. So we have to find 8 collisions, and then we have the entire K-line. How much work does it take to find a collision? It takes about 2 to the 16 challenges, 55,000 challenges. So in all, you need about 500,000 challenges, chosen challenges, to the phone, and you have KI. So go to page. So in order to learn KI for a particular SIM, right now I'm going to assume we're holding the SIM in our hand. What you do is take the smart card reader, much like this one. This is a home-built one from the FDA, or you can just buy one and for about 40 bucks. And you stick the smart card in the smart card reader. Now, this one doesn't fit, because it's a small smart card and this is a regular smart card reader. So, a normal light would fit directly in. What you do with a small smart card is you take a arbitrary piece of plastic the same size as a smart card, or just another smart card, and you paste this in down over the contacts for the other one. Then what you do is you have your computer basically just tell the SIM, run GSM algorithm on this challenge, on this challenge, on this challenge, and you give it 500,000 challenges. And you look at the responses and you see which of them are the same. And from that you can extract KI. So this version of our attack requires you are physically holding the SIM card. Now, the attack in mind isn't you steal someone's phone to hold it and give it back, but rather, right? But rather, the guy that sold you the phone, the minimum wage guy at phone time, could be cloning them in his off hours or on weekends, right? But when you're sold the phone, the KI from it is already extracted. Why not? In most places in Europe, you can rent a GSM phone. You rent the phone, clone it, and return it. You now do this a while, and you have this big list of KI. Now, how long does it take to do this? If you just take a regular SIM and a regular smart card reader and ask it to calculate queries, these aren't very powerful computers, so you can only do about 6 1/4 of them per second under normal circumstances. Research of the Chaos Computer Club in Germany has been able to overclock the SIM. And they can do it a little bit faster. So if you do it at the normal speed, it takes about 8 hours. If you overclock them, it takes a little over an hour. So that's pretty cute. The CCC in Germany, actually, you can download the all the programs you need to do this from their website. You'll need a little bit of extra hardware, which I'll talk about in a minute, which you can download from another one, order from another website. Right. So now the next obvious question is, can you do this over the air? Right. Analog cell phones can be just cloned over the air. I don't have to be holding someone's phone or holding the phone. So can you do this with digital cell phones? The answer is, we don't know, but we're pretty sure yes. So basically what you have to do is impersonate a base station. Have a piece of radio equipment that looks to the phone as if it were a base station. And just send it challenges. Now this isn't that tough. In fact, there's a company in Israel that sells this box that you put in like movie theaters and opera houses. And it pretends to be a base station and just locks on everyone's GSM cell phone and registers it with non-existing networks and thus prevents it from ringing. Right? While it's doing this, it can be cloning your phone. Now, obviously, you can't overclock the SIM while it's in someone else's phone. So you'd have to go with the normal 8 hours speed. So you'd have to catch them coming back to the movies a couple times over the course of the month, or just find it when the opera house is showing the ring cycle. And that would be pretty good. Is there a question back there? I can't hear you.
Yeah.
Yes, you could, except that if you're not part of the real phone system, then the side effect of the fake base station cloning your phone is that your phone doesn't ring, and it can't be used to make a call. So in just like a hotel or a workspace environment, it might become obvious that something is wrong. Whereas if you're going to a theater, which probably advertises this feature that sampling the phone while you're in here, then you don't expect anything wrong. Another thing you can do is if you could build one of these fake base stations in briefcase size, which is perfectly reasonable, carry it on the subway. Most people don't turn their phones off when they go into the subway, but nor do they expect phones to work. So, most people take the same subway at the same time every day. So you just ride the same train every day for a week or a month, and with that you'll get all those people. Because it's totally paralyzable, right? Each phone takes 8 hours, but just as easily all phones in the local area will take a total of 8 hours. Yeah. Only if it's actually registered to the network could it be considered a real base station by the phone. It could do a man-in-the-middle type attack, but only after it's intercepted the key. Because KC is never transmitted, only after it's figured out where KI is will it be able to successfully communicate with both sides after the authentication has occurred. So you can't just obviously do a simple man-in-the-middle attack. Yeah. So we think very little. We think the bottleneck is definitely the slow speed of the processor in the SIM card and not the over-the-air. Yeah. It's 8 hours out. It's not actually. So the proposal is, of course, just change your things to only do a smaller number of things before dying. But it turns out 500,000 queries is not much more than you would expect a phone to do in its life. Because remember, it's not one query per call. Phones can be challenged many times during the course of a call, especially if they're roaming. And base stations sometimes just on a whim say, re-authenticate yourself. If you were going to change the SIMs, remember, in order to fix this, you have to send 80 million new SIMs out to solve the GSM. If you're going to do that, you may as well put a better algorithm in there, right?
Yeah, can you, your hotel system sealing this, could you do a 50% duty cycle type thing where your phone would still...
Oh, yeah.
So you make it twice as long, but you can still seal it without anybody noticing.
Yeah, definitely. They're all the attacks you might assume on this. It's going to be cheap, too. Building radio equipment for a base station is probably not going to be expensive. Of course, it's going to be much more expensive than cloning analog cell phones. So, of course, that's the major attack still. But this is no longer just a theoretical attack, because we can, I mean... This phone and this phone are actually, well, the SIM in this phone and the SIM in this phone are actually clones of each other right now.
Yeah. Would real base stations react to receiving the response to challenges it not make?
I don't know. Yeah, the question is, would a real base station respond weirdly to challenges it didn't make, or would it just drop the packet? I don't know. That would be dependent on the programming in the individual phone. I don't think there's information in the header about which base station you're talking to, but the way the spectrum stuff works, it would only be listening. So in fact, it would never come up, because the real base station would never hear the response because it's hopping spectrum differently. Yeah. Yes, it could be, but base stations, real base stations, aren't manufactured that way, but there's totally nothing stopping them. Because unlike in the case of analog cell phones, where cloning is basically a passive system, in this case, you actually have to have an active transmitter. So you are more vulnerable to being detected when you're doing that. Yeah. Yes, everything in the GSM specifications is available, except for the exact specifications of the algorithm, but that's been leaked. So, basically, everything you need to know to build a GSM system with some ungodly amount of money is available. Because to build an entire network is, of course, really, really expensive. But I don't think just building the radio equipment needed to do the fake base station thing is very expensive. I mean, the company is a little bit of that, right? Yeah.
How did GSM deal with the current issues of having two phones?
Okay, so basically this comes down to the fraud detection question.
Yeah.
They claim they have really good fraud detection. In reality, they have none. So GSM phones are impossible to clone, right? So why bother detecting? So we have to accept. So you cannot use the two clones that are clones of each other at the same time. The authentication station and the routing just get confused, and the second clone won't register to the network company. You can have them on at the same time, you just can't be talking at the same time. Like, you can't have an active call. But you can certainly, as long as one guy hangs up, the next guy can make a call, and the incoming call will tend to go to whoever was the last person to make a call. We don't actually know what happens there, but we suspect because of the way roaming works, it'll actually be easier to, or harder to detect the problem. We haven't done it with this pair of phones, but supposedly the CCC has managed to clone phones and use them in both these areas. Yeah. No. It's exactly the same, except the frequency is different. In Europe, they use, I think, 1800 megahertz, and in the US, they use 900. Or is it the other way around? Yeah. Oh, it's the other way around. In Europe, they use 900, here they use 800.
Yes? Do GSM phones emit like a low level RF that might allow you to clone them? Like a RF leakage?
So, side channel attacks, basically.
Right.
No, because they emit low level RF, but that won't be enough to clone them, because that's basically a passive attack, and this attack requires that choose the challenges, not just observe the challenges. So you'll have to actively send challenges to the phone in order to perform this attack. So a passive coding attack is, I would say, impossible, but this attack doesn't give it. Yeah. So that sounds like a fuzz more than a... So it seems there's a method by turning the phone off at just the right time, the billing information doesn't go through. But that's weird, because the billing information is known, certainly, at the beginning of the call. And So once you start talking, I guess the length of the call is important. That actually, in my extended talk, which you gave it last time, I was talking about the history of analog cell phones. In terms of that is the major attack that was used for a long time, because although authentication was known at the beginning of the call, it wasn't checked until the end of the first call, once the length of the call was known, because communication to the authentication station is so expensive. So you could always, if you picked just a random mini SN pair for a phone, called subway, then you'll be able to make one call of arbitrary length for free. And so you make a call to one of those numbers where you can then dial out and try to keep things down and hang up, and virtually hang up and make another call and so on. And you're basically just on all the time. So, this is our place. Okay, let me just go on to the next, the last slide here. And there's just a little table comparing the different standards for anti-fraud and I'm not sure really what the difference is between mediocre, poor, and terrible and bad are, but it's just what occurred to us. The anti-fraud stuff, of course, could become very good if they start turning on non-all zero keys. The GSM also, we've attacked COM 128, which is only the example algorithm used for GSM calls. However, I think only three providers in the world that we found do not use it. So they could change to it, but of course that would involve issuing SIM cards to whoever. Now it doesn't have to be applied to it, it could just issue new cards to their new customers or their authentication. They should know which customers use the old APA or the new APA. That's perfectly reasonable. But what I bet we're going to see is they're not going to, just because they have, they're not seeing a lot of fraud just because analog phones are way easier to defraud. So they're not going to bother redeploying a whole bunch of smart cards and redesigning their system to counter potential fraud. And that's a bit annoying, because not only, once you discover KI, not only have you clone a phone, if I clone your KI, I can not only make calls with you, but I can listen in to all of your calls, and now I can calculate the encryption key that's being used on your link. Yeah. Sure. So, standard cryptographic hash function. You just pull out wherever it says call from the file, just stick SHA-1 in. Yeah. No, because each SIM would basically have hard coded into it. One of the algorithms, like you were wondering to do. So you put trick into doing these. Then could only attack customers that were still on the old system. So version rollback attack customers.
I just want to make an observation. It sounds like there's a market niche here in that authentication is centralized. So if there's somebody here from the GSM company who could start offering the basic authentication and your new smart card could have it.
Yeah, you very well could, except you have to design new smart cards, not the cash outlay. That's a high one-time overhead cost, so if you're going to do that, you may as well give it to everyone. Now, I just want to finish up by saying, how do you use this AI? Once you have AI, how do you actually make it be all of it? So there are two ways to do it. One way is to find a blank SIM, a SIM that you can program in a KI onto. So here's one. And it in fact has a copy of the KI or the phone on it. And I can just put it in here. And now we can control the phones of each other. The problem is, these are hard to find. It's pretty tough to get blanks. So what you can do is go to www.maxking.com and order this thing called an MK12. And this is a really cool device. It was originally designed for the ATV smart card hacking community, but it works just as well in cell phones. And basically, this side of it is a smart card emulator, and this side of it is a smart card reader. So, it has lots of modes. You can stick a smart card in here and just do regular smart card reading stuff. Or you can, once you've done that, to extract the KI from the card, you then use a software program that simulates the smart card, and you just basically slide this thing right into the phone. And you just slide this thing right into the phone, and you have a serial port plugged into your computer, and your computer is just emulating the smart card code. It's totally impossible. One of the other things that boards can do is just do a manual observation. You put the field smart card in, you put this in the phone, and you just watch the traffic. That's how you learn the protocol that an unknown smart card is using to talk to a new device. And there are also these little thick chips that you can program with the smart card emulation stuff so that you don't even have to plug it into a computer anymore. You can just stick these chips in the slots on the board, and then you have a standalone phoning device. So, all right. So, I'll just leave out my talk. Any more questions? Yeah. So, we've looked at that, but the question was, in the old days of analog cell phones, they could often be put into test mode to become a scanner. Is that true of GSM? We haven't found a GSM phone that could do that. And that has partly to do with the way the frequency hopping is done. So it would seem to be harder to put a GSM phone into a primitive scanning mode. But it could be that I just don't know how to do it. I'll put these slides online. Let me tell you where it will be. My homepage is www.cs.berkeley, which has more E's than you expect, berkeley.edu/IANG. That's my homepage, and when I get back from this, I'll try to remember to put them up. If I don't, email me, and provide them. Any other questions? Yeah?
I've heard that in the education there is a number which is like the phone, which is not like the same, which is
right. So that number is called the IMEI, the International Mobile Equipment Identifier. It is transmitted and technically could be used for fraud detection. If you transmit a different IMEI with your IMSI, then you can use that to set off the warning flag. Except that is a feature of GSM, that you're allowed to take your SIM if you put it in a different phone. So right now what happens is, certainly with TACBell, the way it works is if you authenticate your IMSI with a certain IMEI, and then you turn off your phone and log on to the network later with the same IMSI and IMEI, it doesn't ask you to re-authenticate yourself. But if you send a different IMEI, then it will offer you re-authenticate. So this opens up a new hole, right? The IMSI and IMEI are sent to the clear. So all you have to do is passively scan for a correct IMSI IMEI. And then just program. So the tricky bit is programming a GSM phone with a new IMEI. I don't know how to do that, but I'm totally not convinced it's possible. You just program your phone with a new IMEI, or just construct a radio that fixes the phone, that transmits the IMEI. And then the TACBell doesn't challenge you for authentication at all. The problem then is you still need to figure out what KT should be. And I suppose it would have to be the same one as the most recent shop. So although you could authenticate the call, unless you're in an A50 situation, or A5, if there are papers coming out saying how to break A5 just as a crypto algorithm, not a very strong algorithm to begin with. So you could just watch someone's authentication traffic, get their IMEI, and brute force their KT from that, from their stop him from just breaking the algorithm. From Shaq KC, then you authentic, you log on to the network with the same CNAME and just use kind of like a new function. So, quick questions, I'll take them, otherwise I'll just be wandering around like that. Yep. I don't. $125, yeah. That's really nice. That's the web page, which Mark will talk about a little later, is www.fcards.org. And all the information about the GSM app is available from our website. CCC webpage is www.ccc.de. But you have to know German to read it, or else you're pretty proficient with all the basic level. Okay? So thanks a lot.